Week 7 of the NBA season is underway, and after witnessing the win streaks of the Detroit Pistons and Toronto Raptors get halted over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, while two former running mates in New York's Jalen Brunson and Los Angeles' Luka Doncic captured Conference Player of the Week honors for their work over the last several days, the final month of the 2025 calendar is upon us, as we are only just a few weeks away from Christmas Day. What's up, everybody, and welcome once again to the new 24, the Dirk Nowitzki and Glenn Rice episode, as this marks number 41. For all of those keeping score in the arenas you're listening to us from over the holiday season, as we appreciate your support. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and as always, I'm back beside my friend and co-host, Torrence Stagger, to talk on all the things revolving around the NBA globe that turns. What's going on?
Yeah, and the world keeps spinning and spinning and spinning again. We back again, another Wednesday, episode 41. Shout out to Dirk. Shout out to Glenn Rice and Sarah Palin. You know what I'm saying?
For those of you who are avid listeners of the show and want to hit us up with your thoughts on the topics we speak on and more, you can hit us up on our official email account at tntfpod@gmail.com. Plus, follow our social media handles on IG and Twitter/X at TNTF_ if you like what you hear, to get all you need as it pertains to giving news or info regarding the show. You can also find our episodes and series such as Faces of the League on the podcast platforms you use to listen to your favorite podcast, or by subscribing to our feed at rss.com/podcast/TNTF to ensure you're the first to listen as soon as a new episode drops. But in the meantime, between time, let's get right into it here on the new 24 this week, starting off with a pair of all-stars that you heard us talk extensively about during part 6 and 7 of our 8-part Faces of the League series that dropped this summer, whom happened to hail from the Atlanta metropolitan area and went toe-to-toe in battle against one another this past weekend out in the Twin Cities. And that's Jaylen Brown of the Boston Celtics and Anthony Edwards of the Minnesota Timberwolves, where we'd see Brown bank in a fadeaway over the outstretched arm of Edwards on the contest and hit him with the too small gesture while making an effort to get back on defense early in the affair on the way to scoring 27 of his 41 points in the opening half. However, it would prove to be the one thing that woke Edwards up, as Ant-Man would pour in 14 of his 39 points in the final quarter and take on the challenge of guarding Brown down the stretch, all the while knocking down an off-balance triple in the final minute of play to help the T-Wolves get back in the contest after trailing early and defeat the Celtics by 4 at the Target Center. Thought it was real cool to see these two guys going back and forth with one another in an affair that was missing Jason Tatum, but nonetheless lived up to the bill. We talked about it time and time again, how these matchups between these two squads should always be on national television. I don't know how in the hell this managed to be an afternoon matinee affair, but to see those two guys duking it out like they did in what was an early tip-off, I was impressed. Jaylen Brown getting to it from all three levels of the floor. They put everybody that they could on him, from Ant-Man to Julius Randle to Jaden McDaniels to Naz Reid. Even Mike Conley got some of that work, unfortunately, getting caught up in some switches. But it just wasn't enough. He had a fantastic day. But to see the way in which Anthony Edwards responded, hey, this is what Ant does. And you could tell he fed off the crowd. It was a real good game. And I know that their next matchup, I believe, which will be out in Beantown, is going to be on NBC and Peacock as a part of their Sunday Night Basketball series once that tips off after the Super Bowl. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. But I appreciate the back and forth exchanges between these two guys. It's all in fun, competitive nature, and that's what the game should be all about.
Yeah, man. But don't disrespect Ant talking about Atlanta metropolitan area, man. Anthony Edwards, real Atlanta player. For sure, for sure.
Oh, we know that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Ant, he just bring this out of every superstar. Every superstar he plays, Ant gonna make sure that that opposing star know that it's me and you tonight, one way or another. Whether I'm coming at you or you coming at me, but he gonna force the matchup. And this was just another great performance. You know, he had took the loss against SGA. He had 40 to like Ant's 31, and Ant was able to come out on top this time. But When I see Anthony Edwards with these performances and I think about the Timberwolves, you mentioned Jason Tatum not being there. I look at like, man, Jaden McDaniels. If JT was there, who's gonna be that second guy to step up next to Ant? Do you need to go out and get that guy? Is the ideal second starter Ant another wing player who can also put the ball in a hole at a high rate? Because obviously he looked at Boston, because last year we talked about this same game. Something about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown just brings it out of Ant. And speaking of Jaylen Brown, gotta give him a shout out. Averaging 28 this season. Highest free throw attempts of his career, definitely get into the line. And just his leadership. Derek White is out now. He pretty much relying on Peyton Pritchard night to night. Anfernee Simons, he's not having quite the season I expected when he got traded to the Celtics. And JB, he's been making the most of it and really holding down the fort until JT comes back. I'm very curious to see how that continues. But man, just applaud these two guys for giving us a great one-on-one battle during the early part of this season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you talk about Jaylen Brown, who finished the month of November averaging 29 points to go alongside of nearly 7 rebounds a game and 5 dimes a game while shooting 47% from the floor. He's had to carry a mighty load, and to see him finding a way in spite of injuries and the ups and downs of Anne Simons in his first year out in Boston has been quite impressive. As they currently stand at 11-9 through their first 20 games, which is good enough for 8th overall in the East, only a game back of Atlanta and Cleveland for that 6th seed in the East, which is a spot that they could get to possibly depending on how things go. But Jaylen Brown's keeping them in that position, and I believe he's stamping himself as an all-NBA player through the early days of the year, just like I anticipated and expected. But it's good to see. And like I said, as far as with Ant-Man, of course, there's some questions about Minnesota, the point guard play. Can they find a way to close out games down the stretch against winning opponents? Well, to their credit, over the last couple of games, they've been able to do that, where they recently knocked off the Celtics as well as the Spurs, albeit without Victor Wembanyama. They're getting there. And Minnesota's typically been a team over the last couple of years that started out a little slow, but as the season picks up, I believe that they'll be right in the thick of things, and who knows, could very well be a move away from getting back to where they were the last couple of years in the Western Conference Finals, and hopefully trying to get over the hump and get to the NBA Finals this time around.
Yeah, so when you speak about guys making an all-star team, all-NBA team, you got to look at Jalen Johnson down there in Atlanta right now, putting on great performances. Just had 41, 14, and 7 against the Sixers in a double overtime game. Averaging 26, 11 rebounds, 9 assists per game the last 10 games. Shooting 50 from the floor, 48 from three. Just won Conference Player of the Week a few weeks back. This somebody, man, he's been having a great season, stepping up with Trae Young, who's been out. As somebody you've been real high on, what have you really been liking most about what he's been doing so far this season? I know it's specifically these 10 games you've mentioned to me personally, but just over the course of this season.
What I've enjoyed watching him throughout the year is just continuing to expand in other areas of his game that I didn't initially see him possess when he came into the league, starting with his three-point shot. You know, there was a time where that was the biggest knock on his game, and he's made tremendous strides there, knocking down 40.3% of his looks from beyond the arc. That's up from 31% a season ago. And that's on a tick under 4 attempts a game. And his shooting volume has been steady for about the last few years now. And it's still an area of growth. But finding a way to knock down that shot against opposing defenses, I think he's giving Atlanta everything that they can ask for and more in that regard. And then on top of that, he's been a hell of a playmaker in Trae Young's absence. Just watching a lot of Hawks games, you see the two-man game that him and Dyson Daniels have created amongst one another. A lot of magic happening, a lot of points being created as a result of that. And the thing that's so intriguing about Atlanta having Jalen Johnson be this do-it-all versatile Swiss Army knife playmaker is when you pair him beside Trae Young, you're talking about two guys that are very dangerous And if they find a way to take turns, like creating for one another as well as their teammates, I think that they can thrive together. And Quinn Snyder, got to give him a ton of credit for having a belief and a level of faith in this kid that a lot of people were quick to give up on before he even became an NBA player. This was a guy that left his high school in Milwaukee, went to IMG Academy in Florida, never played a game there, went to Duke, struggled through his first few games, got hurt, came back, fell out the rotation, went from a starter to a bench player, and said in the COVID year, you know what? It's not working out well for me. I need to go. And he drew a lot of ire and ridicule for that from people throughout the college basketball world, just shortly before NIL was introduced. So as a result, his draft stock fell, and he went from a guy that had top five, top 10 talent to getting selected 20th by Atlanta. Things didn't go the way he planned his first couple of years, was in the G League, wasn't getting any playing time under Nate McMillan. Quinn Snyder arrives and pushes him and says, hey, you got to take this game and this craft that you have in this gift series. And he does. And he improves each and every year. If this guy stays healthy, he's very well in the running for all NBA. He's damn sure an all-star. And I wouldn't be surprised if he happened to get MVP votes along the way. May not finish top five before a guy that's managed to overcome the things he has. I say he's had a damn good season and putting together the finest hour of his career. And we saw him getting in the lab with LeBron over the summer. And I think when you have the privilege and the opportunity and the honor to be alongside the game's elder statesman and seeing how he works and the commitment that he has, if that doesn't inspire you, I don't know what will. It seems as though it's inspired Jalen Johnson to emerge as the one in number one out in Atlanta.
Yeah, see, I mean, we're going to slow down and pause on the MVP voting conversation. What I will say is, when you just turn on the game and you watch him play, you just like, this is one of the best players in the league. Like, before you even get to ranking people and thinking about who got commercials and brands and all that, this is one of the best players in the NBA this season. Now, Trae Young, though. Yet this team is only a game and a half out of the second seed in the Eastern Conference right now. And you speak about them two playing together, right? I saw a meme the other day with the GOAT, Michael Jordan, king of memes, that was basically making a joke about Kemba said something about Supermax, and I told him super hell no. And I looked at the Hawks payroll today, and I was curious about that. I was like, yeah, basketball-wise, loyalty-wise, you know, Trae Young's done great things for the Atlanta Hawks franchise. They should keep him. But then I was like, man, Jalen Johnson only making $30 million a year for the next five seasons. Flat. Price not going up, not going down. $30 million a year.
And he's the best player on the team. In the league.
Maybe. I'd have to do some research on that. But
it's up
definitely
there.
Hard to argue. Definitely hard to argue. And then you got N'Keal Alex Walker playing great this season. They just brought him in. Dyson Daniels, as you mentioned. It's a move or two that this team could make that could really make them something serious in the Eastern Conference. That's the only thing I'm holding back on Jalen Johnson. I got to see him do it in the postseason. I know that's a cliche thing to say as an NBA fan, but it's the truth of the matter. That's what separates the good from the great.
And I understand that, but the one thing that Jalen Johnson has done in his quest to elevate his game, he's become a better player in the half court. He's looking like one of the best shot creators in the league, and he's a willing passer. And his court vision, being able to fit the ball through tight windows and guiding guys into open shots and space within the half court, and being able to use his ability to get to the cup driving to open up the cutting lanes for guys like Dyson Daniels, who makes great things happen as an off-ball cutter. When he sees that opportunity, he can throw a lob on time or on the money. And the thing that's crazy, he's athletic enough to catch one himself if you set him up. He makes the game look so easy. I've seen some people try and compare him to Giannis, but Giannis is somebody that's like a freight train. Jalen moves at a fast speed, but sometimes it looks like when he's going down, he's gliding to the rim. It's like I don't even have to really expend too much energy to get to the places that I want to get to on the floor. And for him to be able to put everything all together the way that he is not a surprise to me that he's putting up these career high numbers because he's damn near averaging a triple double. If I'm a guy like Trae Young, I'm trying to figure out, hey, if they want to keep me, where do I fit in here? Because I want to be with a player like that, a wing piece that I haven't had in the last several years of my time in Atlanta. And now I have one that could set me up. Maybe if I'm willing to play off the ball a little bit more and be a solid catch and shoot option sometime when I need to, cool. Because you looking at a duo, if you keep them together, from a passing standpoint, it could be one of the best duos the league has had in years.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing love that they need to figure out is how can they get the most out of that number one pick that they just selected a couple of years back. Zachary Richesay, he still has to find his game. But like you said, if you got two guys who can play make on the floor like Jalen and Trey, maybe that is the recipe for the rest of the guys that you bring in. Like you mentioned Dyson Daniel. I mentioned Nikhil playing great. Quinn Snyder, shout out to him. You know, he's really brought some level of stability back to that franchise.
And I hope that fans listening in and even young people that love the game of basketball, I hope they understand that Jalen Johnson is a story that's worth being monitored. And I hope the league does a better job of promoting him more, because it just goes to show that development isn't always linear. And we talked a lot about the international talent that's come through the NBA over the years as we did in our Faces of the League series. But there are some American-born players as well outside of the Anthony Edwards, the Jaylen Browns, the Jason Tatums that are playing at a high level. You just got to search for them. Jalen Johnson is one of those guys. And kudos to Ricky O'Donnell, SB Nation, for writing a great article about his overall development and how it should go to show a lot of NBA teams the importance of such thing and why you can't always be so quick to give up on guys that you know possess elite level talent. But we've discussed the likes of Jaylen Brown, Anthony Edwards, and Jalen Johnson. Well, what about the reigning champs, who we know is the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team that is not only continuing to play at a 77-win pace right now and looking like a legitimate threat to set a new NBA record for most wins in a single season, but also has a shot to pull off the NBA's version of the Triple Crown, finishing with the best record in the league, winning the NBA Cup, and capturing yet another championship. Jalen Williams is officially back after missing the first 19 games of the season due to recovering from off-season wrist surgery, and the Thunder enter the week having won 12 straight games after managing to pick up a win in Portland to close out the weekend, the only place the defending champions have managed to suffer a loss to date this season, as OKC boasts a 20-1 record to go beside the NBA's best defensive rating yet again, alongside a top 10 offense as well, courtesy of the reigning MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
I'm going to just start off and say it now. That triple crown that you mentioned, two of those trophies definitely coming back to Oklahoma City. They're getting that NBA Cup award. They're getting that this season. And they're getting the Maurice Podoloff Award, which goes to the team with the best record in the NBA. And at this point, there's no reason to believe that this team won't win the NBA championship, which will make them the first back-to-back champion since Golden State did it in 17 and 18. And that 2016 Golden State single season record, I might have to say, man, I think it might be in jeopardy. See, we talked back then when Golden State was looking to break that record. I remember some of those conversations we had during the season. And shout out to my cousin, Tyree, I mention every week on this show, because he was there, big Warriors fan. And I told him, like, around game 2024, I was like, the thing about the NBA is, it's about who plays the hardest night to night. Because some nights, everybody ain't got the energy to bring it at a high level every night. Some of that's due to age. Some of that's due to inexperience. Oklahoma City happens to be in that perfect spot where their best player is, what, 28, 27 in SGA. You got an all-star and J-Dub just returning. He's in his early 20s. You got Chet in his early 20s. A couple of veterans in Hardenstein and Caruso. And then you got a lot of other guys in the middle. But this team is a juggernaut defensively. They have, what, 103 defensive rating? Next team is at 110. And that's with J-Dub, one of their best perimeter defenders, just now coming back after starting 18-1 without him. And the thing about monitoring if this team break that single season record is this. How many teams in a league can actually beat this team on a given night? Truly, if this team locks in and the other team locks in, who can actually beat this team? Because when I look at most teams in the league, I can point to a very glaring weakness that that team has. You can't pick out one with this team. Oh, sure, you know, maybe they don't shoot enough threes for some of y'all. Maybe some of y'all don't like the way SGA foul baits and the way Lu Dort gets away with fouls. But guess what? They're getting those advantages every single night. They have depth. They got nine guys averaging at least 8 points per game. I don't see the Denver Nuggets being a threat to this team in the seven-game series right now as currently constructed. Cam Johnson's over there struggling. You don't even have a strong enough starting five. The Lakers, second seed in the Western Conference. Their best player is still 41 years old. Yes, I know Luka's there. You look at the Eastern Conference. You hear me criticize Evan Mobley every week on this show. I have no faith in that team. The New York Knicks haven't won a championship since the 70s, before the NBA got started for real. Check out Faces of the League, episode two. Guys, I started off this rant saying that they were going to get two parts of that Triple Crown. At this point, you might as well just put it up wherever you place your bets at. They're going to win all three of those trophies this season. It's not as bad as when Golden State got Kevin Durant and we all were like, wrap the season up bad. But I just said it. Who's going to beat this team on a given night, let alone 4 games out of 7?
Well, before you even get to the 4 games out of 7 part, you got to try and figure out how you're going to beat these dudes in the regular season. And when you put it the way that you did, unless if you catch this team on a night in which they happen to be playing 3 games in 4 nights on the second game of a back-to-back, it's going to be kind of tough. I could think of teams that could catch them, but even then,
Give them to me.
you need a lot that could go right. A lot that go right. I tell you one. A team that beat them last year in a regular season showdown out in Houston. That was one of the best games of the year. The Rockets are one of them. Another team I give credit to is the San Antonio Spurs. I think they could be one of them. And as well as even a team like the Detroit Pistons, I think they could be
right.
another. But this is the thing. The thing that's tricky about when you playing an interconference opponent, you only see them twice. I think that record is definitely within reach for most wins in a single season. Oh, that's within reach. They one of the youngest teams in the league, and they're gonna be willing to get up for games in a way that most veteran-laden teams wouldn't be because they still feel like they have something to prove. Just by the way that they talk, the way they communicate with one another, you see it on the floor. And like you said, they've done the majority of their damage without Jalen Williams, who just returned, and you could tell he's working his way back into game shape and wins. This is pretty much his preseason. But even in spite of that, they're finding ways to win games. And not only are they just finding ways to win games, they're doing it in the clutch because each of their last 3 games has been within 5 points in the last 5 minutes, and they've scored 42 points on 31 clutch possessions over that stretch. And even though they've fallen out of the top five in offensive efficiency, they have the NBA's top-ranked clutch offense, with SGA having scored more clutch points already, a league-high 80 points on 52% shooting in those situations, than he did all of last season. They lead the league in shot quality on both ends of the floor. And you know another reason why I think they have a great chance to break that record? Their schedule is relatively soft over these next several games or so, because they begin the month of December with 3 games against teams that rank in the bottom 10 in offense in Golden State, Dallas, and Utah. And even though Hartenstein is going to be out for the next 10 to 14 days due to a calf injury, they've done it before. If you can survive being down without Jalen Williams, what make you think you can't survive being down Isaiah Hartenstein when you got Chet Holmgren back there waiting if someone is able to get through the front line of the defense, which most teams in the league are having difficulty doing enough as it is? You heard Devin Booker talk about it in the group cup play finale against Oklahoma City, where he was saying, look, it's one of the toughest matchups in the league. You're going to find one of the more physical teams, if not the most physical team in the league.
Let's get to a couple hypotheticals right here. SGA, they pull off this triple crown. He wins the MVP, as deservedly so. I don't see how somebody's gonna take that award from him if they win 70 games. I don't care about Jokic averaging a triple double because you all didn't want to care when Westbrook did it as a point guard and he did it consecutive years in a row. And Luka got the ball more than everybody in the NBA right now, so of course he gonna put up crazy stats. Is this one of the greatest 3-year runs we've ever seen with SGA?
It's up there. It's up there. You know, when you can find a way to lead the league in scoring, you win regular season MVP, you win conference finals MVP, you win NBA finals MVP. You're the first man since Shaquille O'Neal to not only lead the league in scoring, but win a championship in the same season. I believe he posted the highest point per game total in an NBA Finals since Jordan back in 93. He's put himself in exclusive company. So you put his 3-year run side by side with any other player over the last 25 to 35 years, it's up there. Whether you like the way he goes about his business or not on the floor, or whether or not you find his game to be aesthetically pleasing enough to you, it's definitely up there. And without him, I'm not saying Oklahoma City wouldn't be a good team, but in clutch situations, there has not been a player better in the league this year than SGA. And this is the thing that's crazy about it, right? Most of the time in the fourth quarter, SGA is sitting back, chilling in his warm-up suit with the Gatorade towel over. That's how dominant this team is. And the thing that's scary about it is they own the Clippers 26 first round pick swap rights, Utah's 26 first round pick, which is top 8 protected, and Philadelphia's top 4 protected first round pick as well. These dudes could potentially have 3 picks in next year's draft, which is a loaded draft class. You know how crazy that is?
Very crazy considering the fact that one, they got SGA locked up already. They got Chet locked up already. You all who follow the league have seen because J-Dub already missed a number of games this season. He won't be all NBA eligible, which means they're going to save another $50 million on his contract, which will give them a little bit more breathing room when you start talking about first and second aprons when you get towards the back end of these guys' deals, which are all like what, 5-year deals. So you got your big three locked up. They seem to have a great relationship amongst the three. And when you talk about team building in the NBA, it's about those other pieces. How can you replace those other pieces? A lot of championship teams don't fail because, oh, they lost a star player or the star player fell off. No, they weren't able to afford to keep those high-level role players. Well, when you're picking up guys in the lottery that they can potentially pick up, I mean, you got to think. Let's just pick somebody. I'm not a big college basketball fan, but I see the hype you give certain guys. Let's say if they pick Cam Boozer. Is that the right Boozer twin? That's the right one. You pick him, and his rookie deal will run concurrently with the last 4 years of the Big Three's contract. So you don't even got to worry about paying this kid for at least another 4 to 5 years while SGA, who's still in his prime years, and Chet and J-Dub, who will be actually entering their prime years, because most people know in the NBA that those prime years are between like 27 to 32. They'll just be arriving at that point. Not to mention a guy you brought up to me, Thomas Sorber, hasn't played yet for this team. We talked about Topic. He hasn't shown up, which I believe once he comes, if he's whatever they believe him to be, now you're talking about a point guard that can put SGA back at the two off the ball, which will make him more dangerous. And I criticize Sam Presti, and I'm going to continue to criticize him because it's fun, but at this point, he's won. You look at some of just the past drafts. They either drafted these players directly or traded the picks that became these players. Derek Lively, Sengun, Quickley, Deuce McBride. These are guys that were quote-unquote in their possessions that they moved. And just think about that. If he gets those picks, if two of those picks land in the lottery, and I'll say it here. The Clippers, we know the whole Steve Ballmer, Kawhi, the money in the account situation that Pablo Torre went out his way to let the world know about. And we haven't seen a quote-unquote punishment from the NBA. This will be the punishment, the embarrassment of that Clippers pick landing number one in a year where you may finally miss the playoffs and your two best stars are on not even the back nine of their career. They on 16 right now. This is David Stern's dream come true here in Oklahoma City.
And you talk about the possibilities of Cam Boozer being on the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think about a guy like Caleb Wilson if he was to fall there, 6'9" power forward out of North Carolina, another elite prospect in the ACC who's known for his exceptional two-way athleticism and versatility. And he looks like a modern-day combo forward who versatility defensively will allow him to guard multiple positions. And with his offensive game and ability to finish around the rim and shoot and create for others, you put either one of those guys over there, it could get so scary. It's kind of like a James Worthy to the Lakers situation in the modern era.
What about the
you
Gary
can't
Peters?
lose. Oh my, Darren Peterson?
Yeah.
If
Why
that
not?
man,
He had
the
James
SGA
Harden before.
clone in some people's eyes. Oh my goodness,
He had James
that would be
Harden over there.
crazy. That, yeah, they have an embarrassment of riches. And Oklahoma City is kind of like the NBA's version of a farm system. Like you
All
said,
right,
the amount
man.
of people that
No,
they can
man. We're not
trade.
doing this.
No, you get what I mean.
We're
You
not
get
doing the
what I mean,
baseball
though.
shit.
No,
We're not
still,
doing the baseball
but
shit.
you get what I mean.
I know what you're
You
saying.
get exactly what I mean. Because everybody in the league is gonna want to trade with them if they can. You know that.
Which means they're going to continue to keep replenishing on the back
Exactly.
half.
That's insane.
Because I always say, what if they just got greedy one day and just woke up and decided, you know what? We want Giannis. You know, like we just
They can
like
get them.
because like yeah, because they let like we just gonna push all our chips to the table. I don't know, smoke too much at practice or whatever. They just like, you know what? We just gonna go get Giannis. We're gonna trade Chet some picks. It can get real interesting. And it's funny because this decade has been marked by no team repeating. We don't quote unquote have a team of the decade. And we got a lot of media figures rushing to make Nikola Jokic the player of the decade. The Canadian answer is being disrespected, man. It might not even be anybody's choice because, okay, they don't win the championship this year. They're going to be a contender for every year the rest of this decade. You can pretty much guarantee that. Five
Yeah.
more years left in this decade, and I can guarantee that they'll be in that Western Conference Finals, probably all of them. The
Yeah.
best bet is the San Antonio Spurs. The best bet is the San Antonio Spurs to dethrone this team.
It's insane that they could manage to have the number one pick in the draft. That's just insane.
They getting the top three
Off of
pick.
a trade that happened 6 years ago. Off a trade that happened 6 years ago. Right now, and little did we know at the time what SGA would evolve into, as we discussed when talking about him exclusively in episode 5 of Face of the League. We did not know. This is unprecedented.
I hope Sam Presti doesn't do the whole I mastered the game and I'm bored thing. No. Dominate. You got an opportunity to dominate. You don't leave that seat until you red R back old and the cigar don't light no more. You see what I'm saying? You just gotta nah for real. Because like you said,
I get where you're coming
if they
from,
get
man.
the kid Peterson from Kansas, you said the SGA clone. All right, well now you got another 10, 15 years to build around. Like just don't stop. I don't like this shit more than the next team, but you know what? Hey, I appreciate greatness more than anything else. And for all my criticisms, I feel like Presti was the only reason that they didn't win a championship in the Kevin Durant era. I know folks want to point to Russ and this and that, but like I always say, Presti, just like a lot of players in the league, he had to take his bumps as a general manager and learn from his mistakes. And boy, did he learn, because now it seemed like he can't miss.
Yeah, he definitely learned. And if he happens to get a top three pick with the team that he's already assembled and he hits in this year's class, oh my goodness. That only adds more to the legend that is Sam Presti in every way, shape, or form. A guy that I truly believe, when it's all said and done, even in spite of the mistakes that he made during the Durant, Westbrook, and Harden years, he has still managed to overcome those and get himself to
Hey,
catch.
talking about a guy making mistakes and not fulfilling his potential after drafting three MVPs.
Yeah, and Hall of Famers at that, you
Twenty
know.
20 years of this dude just making the right move.
And he
Without
hit on those guys 3 years in a row, 07,
what
08, 09.
and without being in the free agent market. Because I'm still giving him credit for going to go get Paul George when he did. Going to go get Melo when he did. Going to go get Chris Paul to get his team a taste of discipline, experience, to the point that they made the playoffs a little bit too early and they still had to start sending SGA down early the next couple of seasons because he had accelerated so much after that season with Chris. Now it's just full steam go, man. Like that's 70 wins guaranteed for sure this season. Like I don't see how they losing three games in a row. Two is already a
Oh
stretch, but
no.
definitely not three.
Yeah, they not losing three games in a row. This is a team that is too dominant, and you're talking about a lot got to go wrong for that to happen. I don't see it. I think this is a team that's chasing history, and as the season goes along, you're going to be reminded of that a lot, and it's going to remind you if you've lived to see teams of past years chase that 70 win mark or what it was like during those times.
The only thing that they should go for, but I don't know is possible, is that, what was that? The Lakers won 33 in a row. And I know we were alive to see the Heat win 27 in a row. That's really the only thing left. For real, that's the only thing left on the table, bro. That's it.
I remember the 27 game win streak very well, of course, and we know where that all ended, but 33, that would be something to see them obtain and try to go after.
I
I don't
know.
see that happening,
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, but.
but I get why you saying it, and as a fan, I would understand why someone would want to see something like that. But speaking of draft picks and possible trade chips, this marks the first week of the final month in 2025, and in just a couple of weeks, on December 15th, free agents who signed during the offseason will now be eligible to be traded, leaving room for many to speculate exactly which players could be on the move in the quest to help teams potentially vie for a championship just months from now. Welcome to the Trade in Places segment, where each week throughout the month of December on the new 24, me and Torrance will take some time to examine a pair of star talents and assess which given teams would make the best fits for the following players that could be on the move sooner rather than later. Let's start this off by examining which spot might be best for a 10-time All-Star forward who is one of only 8 men in the history of basketball to win an NCAA title, NBA title, and Olympic gold medal, and that's Anthony Davis of the Dallas Mavericks, who is currently on the books for $54.1 million this season and has 2 more seasons left on his contract following the conclusion of the 25-26 campaign, where he'll receive $58.4 million and $63 million respectively prior to hitting free agency in the summer of 2028, 32 years old and in his 14th NBA season as we speak, trying to help the Mavericks get back in the thick of the play-in standings out in the West after recently returning from a calf strain that kept him out of action over the past month. It's been said the Chicago Bulls have had internal discussions about trading for the Windy City native, but not at the expense of their young core, according to reports. We know a lot can surface in the coming days and weeks with more teams getting into the mix, but many around the league believe it's a real possibility that his time in Dallas could be coming to an end nearly a year after getting dealt to the Mavs as part of the landmark Luka Doncic trade. Should Anthony Davis get moved, Torrance, which places do you believe would make for the most ideal landing spots for his services?
First of all, let's get the Chicago Bulls thing out the way. Let's get that out the way right now. I'm not saying it's not possible, because when you look at Anthony Davis's situation, you only got but so many moves that you can make from a lifestyle standpoint, right? Going back home is always a great option. But I'm here to let some of y'all in on a little secret. AD don't love Chicago like y'all think he do. Like, don't get this wrong. This the crib. Bro got love for the crib and all that, but bro wear a Packers jersey on Sundays. So it's already a little bit of disconnect right there. Bro love living in LA. You feel me? Like, this ain't somebody that you gonna see around the city during the summertime, despite how great summertime Shai is. So let's remove the Bulls from the board. Number one team I got on my list, I'm not even gonna go number one first. I'm gonna go number three. I got the Charlotte Hornets on there. Why? Because I don't know why. Why not? Maybe you can go over there, chill, get some rest, play when you need to play, but you might be just enough to get that team into the playoff hunt, into the playoffs, which would be good for you and them. Maybe you can't really be reliable enough for contending teams, but you can help a young team out. And they got a lot of talent. And yeah, they got a young center over there, but they could use a veteran over there to clean things up. And most importantly, with Anthony Davis, he's at his best when he has a pick and roll point guard who's looking to feed him on lobs and easy shots around the paint. And getting his own shot consistently has always been a struggle in his career. That's why when people are like, oh, he needs to be the number one option over LeBron, it's like, yeah, but he don't score that easy. Number two, I got the Atlanta Hawks. You already mentioned Trae Young and Jalen Johnson. Two guys, a lot of assists. They got a defensive identity over there. You got Porzingis over there. I mean, so you already dealing with the guy with the injury bug or whatever like that. You might as well give AD a shot if the situation can make sense. And number one, I got the Indiana Pacers. You got to replace Miles Turner. You already are gonna be in the lottery. You're gonna have a top four pick if you continue to have one of the two worst records in the league. You got Tyrese Halliburton, Ben Mathurin. This is a good team, close to the crib. I just was in Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago. They have a Louis Vuitton and a Gucci store there. AD loves to shop. This trade market for AD not going to be that robust. And you got to consider now, this is not like the previous CBA where we knew, okay, one of these contending teams take a chance on them. Some of the teams that should take a chance on them, they're not even in a financial position to do it.
You know, I didn't think about Anthony Davis to Charlotte, but when you bring it up, if the price is low enough, it's a ton to like about that move because when you say how they need a measure of veteran guidance, that's very true. And I think doing so at the five spot could go such a long way because if you could pair him with Ryan Kalkbrenner in that front court at the four and five, man, that'd be real intriguing, especially when you got LaMelo Ball as his pick and roll partner. I think that could do wonders for LaMelo's career, and I think that could really rejuvenate AD on a level if things go well and guys can stay healthy, something that we know has always been an issue with that franchise. You talk about a squad that could get into the play-in range for sure and help to establish a winning culture in Charlotte, something that they haven't had in a while, and you can't tank forever. So if the cost is something like around the lines of, let's say, a Miles Bridges, a Colin Sexton, and maybe another young piece, and you willing to throw a first rounder on the table, that's not the worst thing in the world. And the Hornets don't have a lot of long-term money on the books either. So an extension could possibly work there if things worked well on the court out in the Queen City. As far as the Bulls, I'm not sold. If you're a team that is just cool with cruising at the level that you are, you just want to sell tickets, that's one thing. And I'm not saying that Anthony Davis couldn't help the Bulls, but I don't think that Anthony Davis will help to solve all of those problems that they have. And I don't think that Anthony Davis is a guy that elevates the Bulls to a level that's even close to championship status at this point. The Atlanta Hawks, that's definitely a team that I could see being a perfect fit for AD. You have him beside a Kristaps Porzingis. You solidify your defense on a greater level. And you probably have one of the best front courts in the league if you got him beside Jalen Johnson. I wouldn't mind seeing that at all. I think Indiana is the main location. And I'm going to tell you why Indiana is the main location for Anthony Davis. They don't have a center. This is an issue that they're going to have to address in one way or another. I know Jae Huff has been giving them some positive minutes as of late and has played very well, but I don't see him long term as a starting center. I think he fits their style of play and he helps to unlock an element defensively for them. The Pacers have all their picks. The only issue I think Indiana and Kevin Pritchard in the front office will run into is just matching the salary. I believe they will have to match around 43 million. So you're going to have to put up a Pascal Siakam in order to make that deal go through. Would you rather have him who fits into your system perfectly or a 32-year-old in AD who at his peak is a much better player? It's not an easy answer depending on what risk you want to take, but if the Indiana Pacers want to take a risk, I wouldn't mind them taking that risk, especially when you get a healthy Tyrese Halliburton in the fold alongside of him. And I think over the next couple years, you give yourself a window and potentially put yourself in a two timeline plan if you're able to get a top five pick on top of it. Because you could just tell AD if you get him, hey, we don't need you to play every game. Just chill here and there because we're trying to get that top five pick. But next year, it's on.
Yeah, and ain't nobody giving AD no extension. So I ain't really too concerned about which team's gonna give him an extension. He got 2 years, 110, 120 left on his deal after this season. And I think that might be about it. And the only other team that definitely should try to make a run at him, but they don't really have much to trade, would be the Golden State Warriors, just because
Oh,
they
yeah.
need the size in the center.
But I don't think Anthony Davis will want to go there. That's just my personal opinion. Unless if he just really wants to be in California that bad. And I can speak to what Torrance is talking about firsthand, knowing people that's tight and close to AD. The Lakers move was set in stone 2 years before it happened. I remember hearing it from somebody that's well known in Chicago that played beside AD as a member of the New Orleans Pelicans. My man Cliff Alexander always told me that AD loves LA. And Even though he from the crib, you ain't gonna see him just popping up around places. I've had the privilege of seeing him once in the off season. That was a rare occasion, and it was for a sponsorship event that he had with Red Bull at the time. And then we have another all-star who, ironically enough, is no stranger to Chicago himself, having played in the city for 8.5 years as a member of the Bulls, and like Davis, was also shipped out during last year's deadline. And Zach LaVine of the Sacramento Kings, the 30-year-old shooting guard who was on the books for $47.4 million this season, prior to entering the final year of his contract next season, should he decide to accept his player option of $48.9 million over the summertime. According to reports, teams could be interested in trading for him should he opt to decline his player option for next year, as there has also been some rumblings about Sacramento GM Scott Perry desperately wanting to move LaVine, which is no surprise to us as we spoke about this on 30 Teams in 24 Days when discussing the Kings in the days leading up to the season. Currently playing out his 12th NBA season out of UCLA with his third franchise, as we know his professional journey began alongside Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns on the Wolves prior to him being sent to Chicago as part of the Jimmy Butler deal on draft night 2017. Which potential destinations do you think may make for the most optimal fits for LaVine's services in the event the Kings are able to move him by the deadline?
Number one, the Milwaukee Bucks. You gotta do something to keep Giannis. Giannis is pretending to behave weirdly. Like he's upset. He's mad about the losing streak. He's deleting stuff from his Instagram. Hey, Giannis needs to calm down. Thanasis just had a dunk the other night. They doing all they can to keep you happy over there. I think Zach LaVine could potentially help them out a lot. I mean, he's not quite Chris Middleton, but he can get a bucket. Another team I'm looking at, Golden State Warriors, of course. Just somebody else that can put the ball in the hole, give Steph some relief. Yeah, you got Jimmy Butler over there, but it's like you got to make Jimmy play offense. Jimmy want to be a role player with all the benefits of a superstar. And he's starting to do Jimmy Butler things in the media too, so you might want to pay attention to that. Next, you got the Denver Nuggets. Cam Johnson hasn't really just wowed the world like NBA Twitter would lead you to believe. He'd rather be a podcaster. Maybe you need to send him back to the Brooklyn Nets so he can be closer to the podcast studio. And this might shock a few people, but I got the Boston Celtics on my list. I mentioned earlier, Anfernee Simons. He's shooting 40% from three, but he's not putting up the 20 he used to in Portland. He's coming off the bench. It just seems like a weird fit. And we got Derek White, who's struggling so far this season as well. He hasn't been playing the best basketball. Jason Tatum is set to return late this season, probably best suited to come back next season. If you tell me that they got Peyton Pritchard, Zach LaVine, JB, Jason Tatum might not necessarily be the greatest defensive fit, but they'll definitely be able to put the ball in the hole. And like I said, we talked about OKC. You need as much offensive firepower as possible to penetrate that defense. Why not go for it?
Zach LaVine is one of the toughest players to find an optimal fit for me. Milwaukee is definitely number one on my list because, as you said, Giannis Antetokounmpo is a guy that you have to work to keep happy. John Horst and his front office, I think, have done the best that they can in doing so, even going against the grain and making choices that I personally might not have made, but I understood considering the fact that this is the Milwaukee Bucks. This is an organization that, unless if they draft a superstar or trade for one, is not coming via free agency. You got to make the most of this ride that you're on with him, right? Zach LaVine could be a solid number two beside Giannis Antetokounmpo. And with Chicago not being that far up the road, wouldn't be the worst spot for him, as he'd be in familiar confines, having spent the last 8.5 years out in the Midwest before getting traded back to the West Coast to join Domantas Sabonis, DeMar DeRozan, and the Sacramento Kings. That's really the main place I could see him. Golden State, at this point, I guess. I mean, I'm not sold on them as a contender, but like you said, when Steph goes to sit, that offense has been problematic, and that's something that we talked about last week on this show prior to Thanksgiving. His market is very tough for me to uncover and figure out. Boston, that's a wild card to me. I didn't think about that one. Denver, I know that was a team that he was linked to last winter, and talks had stalled between them and the Bulls for whatever reason. His market is tough.
Yeah, man. Even the Lakers, a team that at one point, I mentioned this a lot, he just flat out said he'd love to play with LeBron. Now, if the Kings were willing to take back, I don't know, Gabe Vincent, Maxi Kleber, and I guess Rui, I don't know how they would put the money together. Yeah, the Lakers got some interesting contracts over there. Nobody really has bad contracts anymore. And, you know, everybody can't put salaries together to make trades. There's all of these weird trade rules thanks to CJ McCollum losing ass. Bro was crying about the Warriors winning and the Trailblazers didn't have a chance. And it's like, bro, 2 6-3 guards in the backcourt, you're not going very far without a dominant center. And he, I remember the interview talked about, oh, well, we had Nurk. Like, nigga, Nurk. All right, whatever, bro. Anyway, yeah, Zach and AD. These aren't the best trade pieces you could think of. Bad salaries, injuries, Zach's attitude. I think one of them will definitely be moved, and I'll be very curious as to see where. The market is tough.
I think both of them have the ability to get moved and more than likely will. But I will say this. If I'm Dallas, I'm not just trying to trade Anthony Davis for pennies on the dollar. And I've seen a lot of trade proposals and mock trades that suggest that they should. And I think that that's bullshit. I think they need to be very patient in assessing the marketplace and take their time if they're really going to do that. Because when I look at Dallas personally and the way that Cooper Flagg is playing right now, from my vantage point, I see, hey, we got AD, we got Kyrie Irving. Let's see how this works once Kyrie gets healthy beside AD and Cooper, and then assess things for what they are. Because everybody's so quick to want to break shit up.
Yeah, let's see the team.
That's my point. No one wants to see this team because they're so upset over the aftermath of the Luka Doncic trade. And I understand that there was a strong contingency of people in Dallas that did not want to see Anthony Davis there. But Anthony Davis did not ask to be there. Okay, so let's just see how this plays out. You got Nico Harrison gone. You all got your wish, but everything ain't all fucking bad over there. You got one of the best defenses in the league right now without Anthony Davis, who just returned. Just won a couple of games. You're not that far from the play-in. Like, let it ride.
Even Clay playing better. Even Clay playing better.
Yep,
Clay playing better. You still got a little bit of depth over there. Jason Kidd then already did his D-Lo experiment. He done with that guy, it seems. Took Cooper off of playing point guard. He's been playing better since he's gotten to play his natural position more. Yeah, and like you said, let Kyrie come back. Because maybe Kyrie can get the most out of AD when AD's healthy. Because I always feel funny about AD injury sometimes. Sometimes I just feel like, yeah, he ain't feeling it.
And Max Christie has also played some great basketball. The guy that was also involved in that trade in which the Mavericks shipped out Luka Doncic to the Lakers. So I want to see how that works. I would not be in a rush to trade Anthony Davis. Do I think he will get traded? Possibly. But I don't think it will be for as bad of a return as others might. And if he doesn't get traded, guess what? I'm going to be excited and eager to see how he fares beside Cooper Flagg and Kyrie Irving once he returns. But, you know, we talk about Zach LaVine and the spots that are ideal for his services in the event he gets traded, as well as Anthony Davis. Well, this past week, we saw Zach LaVine manage to get confronted by Kings fan and season ticket holder Devlin Carter on his lack of defense late in an outing against the Phoenix Suns, to which LaVine responded, "Go home," according to Carter, who spoke on the incident across his social media, among other platforms, when he was asked about it and bought about a back and forth between the two gentlemen prior to Carter being escorted out by security at the Golden 1 Center. I understand where Devlin Carter is coming from. You're a fan. You want to see the team that you pay your hard-earned money to watch 41 times per year play hard-nosed basketball on both ends of the floor. I think as long as guys aren't out of line being the fans, they have a right to share their opinion and take on the game, whether the player finds it favorable or not. In Zach's case, I thought he had the right to express himself the way that he did. I didn't have a problem with what Zach said. I understand on a greater level what Devlin was talking about when he added onto it on the platforms that he spoke on. Seems like a devoted fan that's at every home game. We know he's a businessman. Wasaya Collective does great work with his clothing line and shoe brand. He's no stranger to the NBA, or at least to me, as I've seen him at games in the Bay Area. supporting Stephen Curry and the Warriors as well over the years. I don't mind that. I understand that. And as a player, I would think you would want fans like that. It's just been a rough year for Sacramento. They're at the bottom of the Western Conference standings. I'm no stranger to Zach LaVine's game. I understand why he was getting ridiculed or criticized for not playing defense, but it's a team thing. But I have no problem with what was said. And hopefully the two can mend the fences, because if you Zach LaVine, you can't really take that personal. That's a fan that want to see you at your best. They there every night. You want to make sure that you have relationships with those fans that come out, support you, and watch you play. And as long as it's all fair and in support, I have no problem with it. And I think that it was. I don't think it was that big of a deal. It wasn't like the situation that we saw with Josh Giddey and the fan out in Charlotte, where that fan was apparently trying to get some level of clout off of him.
Well, see, I'm going to speak to that first. With the Josh Giddey incident, I don't know exactly what was said, but based on things that have been talked about the last couple of years, I got my educated suspicions on as to what was said. It's one thing when the crowd decides to do a disrespectful chant and get under a guy's skin with information like that. But when you just the one guy standing up during a free throw when the building's quiet, shouting out BS, you look like an idiot. You're not trying to get a guy to miss a free throw. You're just being an idiot. And that's not cool. You know, if the crowd want to chant something crazy all together in unison, cool. You got 15 to 18,000 people agreeing with you. But you out there on the ledge about some BS. Stop. Now, the Devlin Carter situation, you got people who are like, oh, dude trying to get some clout. He got his brand. He got his company, da, da, da. Hey, you got to do something in order to afford those seats. Let's start there. That's one. Two, like I heard him mention, hey, I drive 1 to 1.5 hours every night to these games. I've come and supported this team the last few years when it wasn't good. I was there when it was like the beam time. Point being, like I mentioned on this show, probably episode 12 or 13 way back. Hey, as a fan, I just want to come home at 7 p.m. and cut my team game on and watch guys play hard night to night. Like, I know we probably not going to win because we ain't got the talent, but don't look like you ain't even trying. And we all have been indoctrinated with the belief that defense is all about effort. It's 10 guys on the court. The guy that's not bringing the effort on one side of the floor, he's going to stand out. And unfortunately, at times in Zach LaVine's career, it's been him numerous times in numerous stops. That's another reason his trade market is very limited. That's another reason he had Jim Boylan here doing weird shit, trying to instill some toughness and discipline into this team. And most importantly, and the guy who was supposed to be the face of the franchise at this time. When you think about DeMar DeRozan, I don't think of a defensive stalwart. I don't think about a good defender at all. But I never question his toughness or his effort level. And I'm not even really questioning Zach's. But it's something that's been following you. And at some point, it's like, hey, man, I understand you playing for the Sacramento Kings. You in basketball hell right now. But, brother, you got to work your way out of your situation sometime. You play well enough, somebody will put that phone call in for you. But don't give them a reason to not pick it up.
No, and that's well said. And that's why when I brought up Scott Perry in the lead in to Zach LaVine and talking about trade scenarios and fits, I said what I said, because we remember when Scott Perry was on BJ Armstrong, who's now his assistant general manager in Sacramento, and Mo Muncy's podcast, talking about Zach LaVine and asking that question, well, how does he impact winning? He's only been in the playoffs once in his career. We know that that's a cloud that has followed him extensively. Having watched him, like I said earlier here, through his 8.5 years with the Bulls, I don't think Devlin Carter was looking for clout. I just think he was trying to clarify the situation. I think he understood where Zach was coming from. I hope that Zach understands where he was coming from and that they mend the fences. Because you know what? When I hear that story as a player or even as someone that covers the league, I respect fans that take that track and pilgrimage to a game and want to see their team play. And of course, you want to see your team play hard, no matter if there's a lack of talent or a gluttony of talent that's there.
And we need that in more NBA arenas. You know, we enter in this part of life in this economy and the way we do business in America where 50% of the arena is corporate sponsor seats. We got people there on dates. We got a lot of transplants from other cities there. We've priced out the real fan in the arena. Because let me tell you how the United Center would sound if it was packed full of real fans like it was in the 90s when the tickets were a lot more affordable. Guys would be hearing that type of talk every single night.
You damn right.
Coming into the arena, walking out the arena. Because those are the real fans. You came across somebody who not distracted. Now I'm there to watch the game. I'm watching you, and you're not bringing it. You know, so shout out to just Devlin Carter just representing real fans out there, you know, and it's not all money based, just somebody that's really there for the game and there for the team.
And that's something that definitely deserves to be appreciated. Something that deserves to be highlighted, especially in this era where you have a lot of articles and periodicals where people are wondering how many people truly watch the game nowadays and trying to analyze and assess the factors that play a role in why people watch highlights more so than the actual live games themselves. So, like I said, I have no problem with it. And you definitely want real fans in the building. And Torrance is right. You know, having been blessed and fortunate to be at Bulls games during the championship years, the arena sounded a lot different than what you hear now. And the stage and the ambiance
Look
around
at
the
Oracle.
arenas have changed too. Yeah, oh yeah, we talked about that many a years. We saw the change in Oracle in his final years as well. And we definitely see it on a greater level now with them at the Chase Center in downtown San Francisco. Look, we understand that the countdown to Christmas Day is underway for some of you, where we'll get the precious chance to unwrap our gifts if we're fortunate enough and check out the five games on slate that day around the NBA. However, there are several games on the national schedule this week that you may want to check out, starting with an interconference showdown on Wednesday between a pair of franchises who are no strangers to one another, having met in the NBA Finals twice, as Bam Adebayo and the Miami Heat head down to Dallas to face the rookie Cooper Flagg, Anthony Davis, and the Mavs at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central Time on NBA TV. Not to mention another East versus West showdown involving teams that happen to share some historical ties to one another the next night as well on NBA TV, as the Warriors roll out to Philadelphia to take on the Sixers at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central. And if you don't get the opportunity to check out Cooper Flagg against the Heat this Wednesday, well, you'll be able to catch him again on Friday night against the Thunder in the nightcap affair on Amazon Prime, set to go down in OKC immediately following Lakers and Celtics out in Beantown, as you can check out your local listings for those times. One matchup that I definitely will have my eye out on this week that lies ahead, Los Angeles at Toronto, Thursday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central Time. We talked about the notorious BI3 known as Brandon Ingram last week in the Raptors, who were riding high. We know that they getting ready for their upcoming knockout round contest against the New York Knicks, which will be going down December 9th. They done lost a couple games. I want to see if they could get back on track at home against a Lakers squad with Luka Doncic, one of the game's premier scorers, LeBron James, and Austin Reeves, team that's second in the West. I think that'll be a good matchup to watch. And then we get in a preview of the NBA Cup knockout round play on Friday, December the 5th, between Miami at Orlando at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central Time, the Battle of the Sunshine State. Every time those two teams play, game typically come down to the wire. This time around, you got Tyler Hero healthy. I know the Magic defeated him in the season opener. Desmond Bane's been playing some incredible basketball, scored 74 points in his last two outings. No Paolo Banchero, no problem for the Magic. They've been red hot. You got Anthony Black starting to come into his own, a guy that I said on 30 teams in 24 days was the X factor to Orlando's success this season. He's showing it in every way and more. Franz Wagner's playing elite level basketball, going up against, like I said, Tyler Hero, Norman Powell, Bam Adebayo, and that high pace offense under Eric Spoelstra. That should be an interesting contest. And then on Sunday, you got Boston at Toronto, 2:30. Think those would be the games that you want to watch out for. NBA Cup play around the corner. You got a preview. Let's see how those teams are ramping up for that $500,000 plus prize out in Vegas that's going to be on the line within the coming weeks.
Yeah, so we go to Friday, Phoenix, Houston. KD's back. We can finally get that match up. I wonder if Devin Booker will be back in time for that game. Knicks Magic Sunday, early game, 11 a.m. Central Time. Just off the fact that it's an early Sunday basketball game, I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to say the Orlando Magic are the most entertaining team to watch in the league this season, but they always seem to have a good matchup week to week. You got Phoenix against Minnesota Monday on Peacock. And then just this week, Bulls fan. The Bulls have lost four straight games. Their next five, the Brooklyn Nets, the Pacers, the Warriors, Charlotte, and the Pelicans. We told you about this team early in the year. We told you all to settle down when they got off to that 5-1 start. Now they've come back down to earth. Let's just see if they go down below earth at this point, because if they can't come out with at least a winning record during this five-game stretch, then, you know, more questions need to be asked. And the NBA, I got a question for the league office. You had a solid NBA Cup group play this year once again. Why wait so long for the knockout round? Why are we waiting a whole week to get these games? Nonetheless, next Tuesday, like you mentioned, Miami and Orlando. And you got Knicks at Raptors. And then that Wednesday after, you have the Suns against OKC, Spurs, Lakers. Hopefully, guys are healthy for that game. But next year, man, you got to keep the ball rolling week to week until the tournament's done. We can't have this 1 week break. I mean, I understand scheduling and things like that may play a factor, but you don't want to kill the momentum of something that you're still trying to build and get people to come around on. You still got players in post-game press conferences confused about the whole group play thing, but time will fix that. Next year, keep the ball rolling.
Yeah, and I understand why you're saying that, because that final night of group play was exceptional. We got some great games between San Antonio and Denver, who were duking it out for Group C in the West. We also got an incredible outing out in the Motor City between the Magic and the Pistons, who were fighting for Group B, and that game came all the way down to the wire. And Orlando pulled that out in valiant fashion, courtesy of Desmond Bain, stepping up big late, making key defensive plays, and hitting some big shots down the stretch. You can catch all those games on Prime Video. December 9th, you got the games in the East between the Magic and the Heat, the Raptors and the Knicks. And then December the 10th, you got the Lakers and the Spurs. I hope Wemby is healthy and ready to go for that one. And then you got the Thunder and the Suns, two teams that happen to be in the same group and were duking it out for Group A in the West on the finale night, and the Thunder came out victoriously, but the Suns were able to get that wild card spot as a result of holding the highest point differential. We know Phoenix is a team that's not going to quit and give up on any given night. You heard us talk about them a couple weeks ago. You heard Torrence say Dylan Brooks was his baller, you should know, for the month of November. Talked about Colin Gillespie, who's been playing some phenomenal basketball. They just went to LA at the top of the week, knocked off the Lakers, and they've been taking advantage of that Peacock schedule that they've been getting on the national radar and winning games. Phoenix is becoming one of my favorite teams to watch on League Pass this year, man.
One last thing about that game you mentioned, Lakers-Raptors.
Yeah.
You remember last year after post-hip-hop battle, Drake Kendrick. You remember Drake wanted to pull up to the game where DeRozan was playing to make his presence felt. Mind you, I don't think him and Brian crossed paths last season. Just putting that out there, I'm a little curious, you know, if Drake shows up for that game Thursday night and if that incentivizes LeBron to give us a vintage performance possibly, especially after you mentioned the game he had against Phoenix earlier this week, which has a lot of people saying that Father Time has finally put him on his back in round 12. I think it's still too early to call that, but just some more BS to help you tune into the game possibly Thursday.
Well, that's a wrap on this episode of the New 24. If you've enjoyed all that you've heard throughout the first 41 episodes, including this one, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating, letting us know what you love about it across the platforms you use to listen to all of your favorite podcasts. As we can't thank you enough for all of your support, or just send us an email informing us of your thoughts on it directly at tntfpod@gmail.com. Make sure to also give us a follow on the official social media platforms for the New 24 across Instagram and X at @TNTF_, to make sure you don't miss any announcements as it pertains to future shows and episodes, including on all of the latest currently trending around the NBA today. Don't forget to subscribe to our RSS feed, where you can also check out our series such as Faces of the League on rss.com/podcast/TNTF. Definitely continue to stay engaged with us to get the insights you need on all you want to know around the league, and we'll be back next week to talk on the hottest storylines and more to surface around the hardwood. Once again, for myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrin Stagger, thanks for tuning in, as we hope that you enjoy the rest of your week. Stay safe, and as always, peace.